Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, June 5th. We're nearly into summer for real. We got some interesting stuff lined up for today's show. Joining me today is Ayu and Peter. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello there.
And there's some new recruits to the Speak Up team. And Ayu is going to be bringing us an artist feature this morning in about 15 minutes or so. A little later in the program, we'll talk a bit with Peter about some of his interests and what he's going to be bringing to the show later on, future episodes. We're going to start today off, though, with an interview with Simi Dhaliwal of the SFU Women's Center, which is one of the key organizations run by the Student Society here at SFU. And they have a place here in the same building we're in, in the Student Union building, and they're going to talk about some of their services in context with last fall's 16 Days Against Violence Against Women. And that interview conducted by Vivian Frudel, our intern. And we also will be, as I said, doing an artist feature with Ayu, and we'll also bring you looking at Lyme and Bird Note and a bunch of other stuff throughout the show. So here is Vivian's interview with Simi Dhaliwal.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm your host, Vivian, and today we have a very special guest. It's Simi from our Women's Center at SFU. So, who are you? And what are you doing here on campus?
So my name is Simi. I am the Simon Fraser Student Society Women's Center Coordinator. Just for context, we're the oldest women's center in British Columbia, so 75 years.
Oh, wow.
We originally started off in the women's caucus that existed on campus. And then in the early, 80s, end of 70s, early 80s, we became the women's center. So what we do a bunch of things, but basically to service all graduate and committee members in Simon Fraser University, so in Burnaby campus, Surrey, and Vancouver. And we try to do an array of things, but mostly providing safe sex supplies, free menstrual supplies, so that includes pads, tampons, diva cups, reusable pads, crisis intervention support, so whatever that means to you in whatever precarious situation you may find yourself in and you need additional assistance, I am that source for students. And if you're just having a bad day and you need someone to listen to your problems about being a student, I'm also there for that as well. And then the center is run by students. So I have about 16 collective members, which are a governing student board that runs the space in a virtual and physical form, meaning that we put on weekly programming, we do month-to-month events, community initiatives, research goals, and then just a place for students to come rest and have fun. And when I mean rest, I mean we have bunk beds and resting areas in our center. We have a designated area for students that need to breastfeed their children. We have designated quiet areas. And then by extension from the main center right next door, we have a lounge that's open accordance to the building, the student union building hours, so from 9 to 10 p.m. And it's just a smaller, less regulated area than the main center. And then that lounge is open to non-binary and anyone that identifies being a female. So it's a bit of a safer space. But the main center that I work out of is welcoming to all genders. So I am always excited to have men in my space. people's families, people's children just come through. But yeah, it's just kind of like a small little community on campus if you're looking for a safe space to just hang out, study, and read books and meet new people.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Sounds very good. And how does an average day at the Women's Center looks for you?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like every day is very, very different. Mm-hmm. I'm just coming off of a really busy season in September, and October really, really busy. But right now, I guess I'm kind of in the middle. As students are freaking out about midterms and finals, I find myself looking at year-end reporting, a lot of admin work. I have a couple student cases that I'm working on. I have a couple campaigns coming up in the spring, so one focusing on student homelessness, and then the other one focusing on how happy is the current student demographic about SFU health and counseling and the health benefits that we get out of it. Just to kind of see if we're still providing a good service or if we need to kind of collectively work with SFU admin to kind of rejig and move things around to make sure that students feel like, you know, they're taken care of.
Yeah.
That's the goal. So right now, I guess I'm doing a lot of surveys, emails, admin, one-to-one meetings, but no one day really looks the same. It really just depends on the needs and wants of students coming in and what I end up getting done in between that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And we will dive deeper into the topics. So women tend to be part of the hidden homeless population.
Yeah.
And what does this mean? And do you think this is true?
So women being a part of the homeless population, yeah, I feel like more than the most vulnerable are women, women with children. I find that a lot of women that are fleeing domestic abuse or are trying to, you know, detach from family for whatever reasons they may be, especially young students. If you're financially dependent on your parents or your partner, there's resources out there. It's just it takes a lot of jumping through hoops to get to that point. And it really just depends on where you're at in the spectrum of life, if you have the capacity to do that or not. So yeah, more if than not, I find that a lot of student younger women tend to face the risk of homelessness a little bit more naturally. Because like, for instance, I was helping a student out relocating from her abusive household. And like with BC services, we have a bunch of crisis and like emergency shelters, but they have priority lists, right? So if you're abusing alcohol or drugs, you're put as priority. If you're with children, specific type of priority, but in very different types of cities, and depends on how accessible it is via transit. And then if you're a student who's just kind of not in immediate physical abuse, but like emotional abuse, it puts you lower on the list of priority. So we go from like 80 crisis centers to like 20, 20 being to 10, 10 having wait lists. And then more if than not, you're trying to find like a place for the beginning of next month, right? You don't, you're kind of stuck between 10 or 15 days of not having a place. So yeah, I want to stay away from it being necessarily gendered and just being more like a student problem, because a lot of young adults kind of go through some very precarious situations. But I definitely do feel like, yeah, the risk of young adults kind of facing homelessness is more of an issue now than it has been in a really long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what are the biggest problem women have on the streets?
I think it really depends, because again, like, I service mostly students and young adults, so I find for them it's knowing what resources are available to them, and then finding the capacity to access them. So accessibility is a really big one. I haven't come across too much out of like addiction process, like within SFU necessarily. I do volunteer at the Downtown Eastside Women's Center on weekends and on my own time. So that is a different reality, because they're a lot older and they've been in and out of the system. But as a whole, I find that residents and people that exist in the downtown east side are the outproducts of a system failing them. So that very much falls on the lack of resources and support that the government is like wanting to provide. Mm-hmm. And then naturally they're just kind of cast within the system where they're just kind of pushed around from one institution to another institution, but there's no long-term planning, mm-hmm. right? There's short-term fixes for sure.
Yeah.
But that's assuming that someone with addiction is able to overcome like their addiction to regulate a day-to-day, like a normal day-to-day living, mm-hmm. right? We don't all exist in the same capacity. Like, how you and I work isn't someone house, like, from the downtown east side will be able to work on the same pace, right? Yeah. And not because they can't, it's just life has, like, washed them out to the point where they just don't know how, right? And it takes a lot longer. So I find that most times, with women specifically, it's accessing clean resources, mm-hmm. meaning anyway from proper and clean drug uses to menstrual supplies to education and resources and income and money that they can get through the government or through the grant programming. And then all of that is kind of tied into accessibility. So like, how easy is the language?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, if my mom from India can't understand a legal document, I think it's inaccessible.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think resources should be gatekeeped by certain languages or procedures, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We all need money.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be really, really difficult for you to get to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, I think it's the institutions, the policies, and the type of programs that exist that, technically speaking, yeah, there's tons of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
But one, do people know about them? And two, can people apply to them on a regular knowledge base, you know? Like,
yeah.
not going above and beyond or looking for other professional help where they can't pay for that, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of, like, how I see it.
Uh-huh. Okay. And how do you help them?
Yeah.
And
so with students specifically, I find myself talking around the school BC School Aid, so grants. So grants are the bane of my existence, and it's not hard. There's just a lot of steps. What they do is you need to have your family income tax form for them to validate where you stand as far as need of money and grants.
Yeah.
But if the problem is your family and you're trying to run away or detach from them, they require a letter from your parents or like your legal guardian.
Yeah.
And their documents. And if you want to go to the procedure of not being able to get those grants, you have to apply with a notarized letter stating the conflict is legit, and then getting a therapist or a school counselor to write a letter, and then some other adult or that parent that you're having conflict with to write you a letter that you're not on good terms.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I think it's very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Given that a lot of students, like, it's $800, $900 on mm-hmm. a biweekly basis to help you survive, right?
Yeah.
Because education should not be inaccessible.
That's true.
SFU admin likes to say that, yeah, you have tons of grants and all that stuff, you need a minimum of 9 to 12 credits. So that's between 3 to 4 classes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're working part-time or full-time and you're looking to, like, you know, survive out of, like, immediate help from your family, that's asking a lot of just a regular student, right? Like.
Yeah.
So then again, it goes back to, yes, technically we have those helpful situations set in place, but we make it next to difficult for students mm-hmm. to get X, Y, Z. And then on top of that, I have students who want to get diagnosed for ADHD mm-hmm. or for autism. SFU covers it, but it's like additional, you have to pay $2,000 to $3,000 out of your pocket immediately, and then you get reimbursed later, right?
Mm.
But that's still, again, mm-hmm. like, you get reimbursed, but what student is going to be like, I don't know where I'm going to give those $2,000, you know? So,
yeah.
And then if you get diagnosed and you get the official letter, you can access more grants and funding, but then you need more additional documentations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's those additional steps. So where I come in is I'm working on an internal resource guide where I kind of break down all of the forms, all of the links, and I have them in one area. I usually get students to give me their personal information, so if they don't have capacity to fill out the applications, I do it for them. I have some contacts within SFU as well as an SFSS, so we tend to work on letters, notarizing documents, trying to make it as easy and accessible for students to get free money, right? That's kind of like the end goal. And that's one element of it. Another element, I guess, is more of the crisis intervention. So if they're going through a precarious situation at home or with their partners or what have you, more if they're not, students come to me and they're like, well, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
How do I move out? What do I do to, like, you know, fundraise money for myself? How do I balance my funds? So I'm doing more practical life skills with them until they feel confident enough to, like, leave.
Yeah.
So we're not setting them up for disappointment and failure.
Mm-hmm.
And if crisis housing isn't an option, I try to look for roommates, like people from like-minded communities, from similar situations where they're looking for, you know, starting a community and a friendship and all that stuff too. So a lot of it's just kind of like community building and resource building.
Yeah.
And then I've done school. I've worked 10 years. I'm like a vetted adult, I guess, in loose terminologies. So I know things of resources and how you can go to banks and get money and do X, Y, Z. So it's just kind of passing on that knowledge and making sure that students are aware of all the resources around them to then decide what's best for them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just kind of remind them that they are in power, even if they feel like they're not in power, you know?
Yeah.
Small things like that.
Yeah, you do such a good job. Oh, and I think your job is very important here.
Thank you.
And what do you think, what can the general public can do better?
Honestly, I think there's a lot. I think the best thing anyone can do is just have empathy.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone gets really caught up in the details of their life and X, Y, Z, but we forget to have empathy. And I know that sounds really like easy and vague, but having kindness for people and having space to listen to them tends to do way more than anything, really, because a lot of people just feel neglected, unheard, ignored. I think it's a really hard time being in post-secondary right now because we're coming out of COVID times, and there's students who've done 3 years of university online and this is their first semester back. There's new students who've only done high school 2 years ago and they're just learning how to be themselves now, right? And yes, you're 19 and you're an adult, but you're unlearning a lot about yourself to figure out who you really are, you know? And that's a really hard time for any young student. And on top of that, you're doing, you know, education and learning the same way as post-secondary, which was so much more different than high school. And I sense a lot of anxiety in students and a lot of pressure to perform a certain way. And they forget that they're just people at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And post-secondary is so much more than your grades. It's about the people you meet. It's where you go. So having empathy and be curious. And by that, like, look at the resources the institution provides for you and the resources that Simon Fraser Student Society provides for you and utilize those things. Because the best time is to be a student, right? Like, you can ask for as much help as you want. You get to meet some incredibly, incredibly amazing people. You get to unlearn a version of yourself when you were in high school and you kind of figure out who you want to be as an adult. And even then, it changes, right? It's a constant change. Yeah. You're never going to be the same person year in, year out, semester in, semester out, right? And then, like, finding a safe space for yourself on campus. For some students, it's the Women's Center. For others, it's out on campus. For other people, it's FNMISA or the radio station or SOCA. Like, every student needs a safe space to just be themselves, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't necessarily be yourself day-to-day in all your lectures with your professors and your peers and your colleagues, right? Because we're all trying to figure out how to function in life.
Yeah.
So have empathy.
Yeah, I think this is a good including ending sentence for this topic.
Yeah.
So thank you, Simi, for this amazing and interesting interview. I learned so much more about the Women's Center here at Simon Fraser University. And if you have any problems or troubles at home, just go there.
And thank you to Vivian Frutal for her interview with Simi Dhaliwal of the SFU Women's Center and some of the many services they provide. That interview was conducted last November as part of CJSF's programming related to the 16 Days Against Violence Against Women. And thanks again to Vivian for that great interview. My name is Magnus, and joining me here in the studio are Ayu and Peter. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello there.
Ayu is going to be doing an artist profile in a minute. Who's the artist you're going to be profiling?
I want to introduce the artist called Zard.
Excellent. And they're a Japanese artist?
Yes.
And of course, you're Japanese yourself, right?
Yeah, I'm Japanese.
Yeah. So that's coming up in just a few minutes. First, we're going to talk a bit about Vancouver weather. It's going to be pretty hot this week. The forecast calls for the next few days is going to be pretty sunny and clear. Temperatures in Vancouver in around the low to mid 20s, but inland, Burnaby, like where we are now, and further inland, it's going to get quite hot, up to 30 degrees, a little more with, and feeling a little hotter than that even with the humidity, which fortunately isn't too bad. You guys get up to anything interesting this weekend?
When you ambushed me, was that just a little while ago? There's a place. It is called Mole Hill.
Yeah.
In the West End, and actually, it's a block where they have preserved these older homes, and they've given it original paint job.
Yeah.
And it's one block, and instead of demolishing it, and they had an art gallery opening.
Oh,
they
wow!
Had, they sort of have. They're going back to every month, and it's the people there. But if you haven't ever been there, it's right behind St. Paul's. And it's interesting because the homes look like they were brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And one home is from 1885, and the oldest and the newest house is, what, 100 years old.
Oh, very interesting. So a whole block of older homes that have been all fixed up and brought back to mint condition.
And they have people, they sort of subdivide. I don't think it's quite social housing, but it is interesting, and people have a part of their garden that they tend to.
Right.
I mean, but they don't have to, but they can be given a part of the garden. So the gardening is quite good on that block.
Interesting. That's very nice. And adjacent to downtown, if it's right behind St. Paul, so very easy for people to get to. Great. How about you, Ayu?
I want to go to Stanley Park to try cycling because I haven't tried cycling.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's very nice all along the seawall, the cycling, and it's going to be good weather for it. As I was mentioning with the forecast, pretty hot near the water, but very hot inland. So getting out to Stanley Park will be one of the places people can go to get a bit of relief from the heat. The weather is going to take a little turn towards cooler temperatures at the end of the week, and it looks like next weekend's going to be cloudy with a chance of showers. So if you're hoping to get to the beach, maybe one of the evenings this week is the time to do it before time runs out. All right. Ayu has a profile for us with the Japanese artist Zard. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Okay. Today I'd like to introduce to a Japanese artist called Zard. And Zard was a Japanese pop and rock group. And the main vocalist was Izumi Sakai. And she was the best-selling female recording artist of the 1990s and has sold over 42 million copies. The first song I'll be sharing with you is called Yureru Omoi, which released in 1993.
Bye.
Yureru Omoi by Zard. Now let me tell you a little bit about the group's main vocalist, Izumi Sakai. Izumi Sakai was born in 1967. In her early 20s, she worked as a company employee and model, but she had a strong desire to be a singer. She made her debut as the vocalist of the group called Zard when she was 24 years old. Initially, Zard was a solo unit with only her. From the second album onwards, four members, guitar, bass, drums, and keyboards, were credited. For about a year, vocalist Izumi Sakai and the four members of the backing band performed as Zard. After returning to a solo unit, she continued to have numerous million sales hit. Surprisingly, 9 albums in a row achieved million seller status. However, shortly after the release of her 42nd single in 2006, she was hospitalized for cervical cancer. Her surgery was successful, but the following year, her cancer spread to her lungs and she had to undergo long-term treatment. In 2007, she fell down the stairs while taking a walk at the hospital when she was hospitalized and passed away. She was only 40 years old. Her death was a shock to the whole of Japan and made people deeply sad. Last month was the 16th anniversary of her death. Even after all these years, her songs are still listened to and loved by many people. I started listening to her music when I was in high school because my mother was a fan of hers. I immediately fell in love with her clear and beautiful voice, which is delicate yet powerful. I wish I could have come across her when she was alive and joined the live concert. In addition to the charm of her voice, the world view of her lyrics is also what attracted me to her music. She not only sang vocally, but also wrote the lyrics to all her songs.